Now, to share a little bit more of a serious story. So in late 2020 to early 2021, I was living a life much different than the one I live now. At that time, I was a sophomore in college, and I had a group of friends that I thought I'd have for life. I had a girlfriend that I thought was great for me. I was in good standing with my relationship with God. I had a good church going life, and I was kind of killing the game. I was at the top of the world, what I thought. I was living the life I thought I was meant to be living. And then about 510 days ago, the most memorable day of my life happened. I used to call it the worst day of my life, which it might still be, but I'd rather call it the most memorable day. It was the day that changed my life forever, and I'll never forget it. It was March 15th, 2021, and I'll spare the details of the night, but I'll sum it up real quick. That night, some things came to light in our big friend group we had at college. Amongst some other less significant things, there were things about me and my personal struggles that I hadn't shared with the group. Struggles that were ruining my life, and I didn't even realize it. But that's another story for another day. Anyways, that night, I lost all of my friends, my girlfriend broke up with me, and the life I had built up for myself had all crumbled within one night. I moved in with two friends that will never know how much they mean to me. My grades tanked, I stopped participating in a lot of school things, and I isolated myself. The only time I saw other people was when I reffed intramural games, or if I walked past the lonely corner in the coffee shop I went to, or I was doing laundry with my cousin. So in this time of isolation, and what some may call depression, I was stuck. I lost those relationships, and I couldn't accept it. For a very long time, longer than I would like to admit, I was trying to get those relationships back in my life. I was trying to get back to where I was. I was still chasing after those lost relationships. So in my opinion, one of the most unsatisfying stories in the Bible is Jonah. For those of you who haven't read the story in a while, here's a small recap before we get into the text. Jonah was a prophet, and he really never got it. And if you read it, you can spot it. He did not get the point. He was given a message from the Lord and that he needed to go to Nineveh and preach to them. And Jonah did not like that idea. And that covers about the first three verses of this book. So let's dive into the text now. If you have a Bible and want to open up to Jonah, whatever, feel welcome to. But if you don't, no worries. The Bible was meant to be listened to anyways. So let's read the first chapter of Jonah, starting in verse 1 and going through the end of verse 16. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai. Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. Okay, real quick, pause. Colin, you ready? Come on up. I'm going to have Colin help me with a little visual aid real quick. This is Colin. For anybody who doesn't know Colin, he's great. He was more than willing to help me out this morning. All right. Colin, you stay where you are. Right there. So y'all slowly count with me. I'm going to take a step, and we're going to count. So I'll go one, two. Y'all know how it goes. Okay. One, two, three, four, five. All righty. And then I'm going to take another half step. Thank you. All right. So the podium right there is Joppa. That's where Jonah was when he got on the boat. That's where he was when, you know, the story starts. Every step I took equals 100 miles. So if anybody can do it, how far away am I mileage-wise from Joppa right now? There we go. Awesome. Y'all are so smart. Okay. And can anybody guess where I traveled to? Nineveh. Yeah, that's right. None of y'all said Tarshish. So I heard Nineveh. So I'm in Nineveh right now. So see how close and convenient that was if Jonah were to just listen to God and take a step right over here? But Jonah did not do that, did he? All right, Colin, you're up. So slowly, like we practiced this morning, start walking this way. We're going to count with Colin. I'll tell you when to stop. One, two, three, four, five. Stop. Take a half step. All right, so now we are equidistant from Joppa, both of us. All right, Colin, you can keep on going. Six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Stop.
I gave it 10 steps.
Yeah. So now you're about twice the length away from Joppa as I am. You're 1,000 miles from Joppa. But Jonah did not stop there. Okay, keep going. Slowly as we all count with you again. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I didn't say stop. 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Stop. All right, do you think that's how far Jonah went, Colin?
Yeah.
No, you're right. So, Colin, you're currently 2,000 miles away from the podium. And you said Jonah does not stop there, and you're correct. So keep going. You're almost there. 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. Stop. So look how far away Colin is compared to Joppa, and look how close I am compared to Joppa. Jonah ran that far away because he did not want to confront the Ninevites. He did not want to preach to them. All right, Colin, thank you. You can sit down. I just wanted to give them that little... Yeah, clap for Colin. All right, let's continue in the text. Verse 4. Then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose on that ship, they threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid and cried out to his own God, and they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. But Jonah had gone below deck, where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. The captain went to him and said, "How can you sleep? Get up and call your God. Maybe he will take notice of us so that we will not perish." Then the sailors said to each other, "Come, let us cast lots to find out who is responsible for this calamity." They cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. So they asked him, "Tell us, who is responsible for making all this trouble for us? What kind of work do you do? Where are you from? What is your country? From what people are you?" He answered, "I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land." This terrified them, and they asked, "What have you done?" And they already knew he was running away from the Lord because he had told them earlier. The sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, "What should we do to make the sea calm down for us?" Jonah said, "Pick me up and throw me into the sea, and it will become calm. I know that it is my fault this great storm has come upon you." Instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder than before. Then they cried out to the Lord, "Please, Lord, do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man, for you, Lord, have done as you pleased." Then they took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. So we already see a big chunk of the story here. That's 1/4 of Jonah right there. Jonah is asked by God to do something. He runs away, causes chaos. So after the men of the ship throw him overboard, we see in chapter 2, right after that, a big fish swallows Jonah, and that leads Jonah to say a big prayer. The prayer summed up is basically a prayer of praise and thanksgiving. He tells God he's thankful that he saved him from drowning, and that people wishes they had a God like God. Chapter 3, we see Jonah receive the word of God again and telling him the same thing he had already said. Chapter 3, verse 2, he tells Jonah, "Go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim it to the message I give you." So Jonah this time does as he's told, and he went to Nineveh and told all of Nineveh that they would be overthrown in 40 days because of the way they had behaved. The Ninevites believed God, and the king declared that everyone must stop. Let's read chapter 3, verses 7 through 10. This is the proclamation he issued in Nineveh. "By the decree of the kings and nobles, do not let people or animals, herds or flocks taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink, but let people and animals be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent with compassion and turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish." When God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he relented and did not bring on them the destruction he had threatened. That's pretty cool. So now the Ninevites have changed their ways, and God shows them mercy and did not let the Ninevites get overthrown. That was not what Jonah wanted to happen. Jonah was not happy, not happy at all. He wanted to sit back and be like, "These suckers, I give them hope, and now they're going to get destroyed." That's not what happened. We know how the story goes on from there. We read the rest of the book and see how God gave Jonah so many chances to show compassion and mercy on the people of Nineveh. God tried to get Jonah to understand and to turn away from his hatred for these people, but that never made Jonah, in all honesty, stop being a whiny baby about it all. And then the book ends with a question, and it's the most confusing thing in the world. But whatever, that's something I'll ask God about one day. So going back to the beginning of our story, that little summary I gave at the very beginning in those first three verses, Jonah had run away from God because he hated these people. He ran away from something he did not want to be doing. This is where I want our focus to lie. Jonah hears something that he doesn't want to and decides to run. Remember what we did with Colin? Colin was all the way over there, and yeah, I told him to. But he ran away just like Jonah did. I don't know about y'all, but I can almost guarantee every single person in this room has done that at some point, literally or not. Even Ezra last week told us about how he was ready to pack up all of his stuff and run. It was a great story, Ezra, by the way. So think in your head about it, because I can tell stories on stories of running from something because you don't want it, again, literally or not. In kindergarten, I faked sick so I could stay home from school because it was baked potato day, and I hated baked potatoes. Unless they're made by the Smiths. There you go. Anyway, so there's that kind of running. But I also want to take it one step further. If y'all will look in scripture with me and take it a step further, and if it doesn't make sense, just smile. Because if we look deeper in scripture, I think we can see he was actually chasing something. He was chasing something that wasn't good for him or his relationship with God. He was chasing a hatred. A hatred for the Ninevites that was only boiling up more and more. How often do we find ourselves not only running away, but chasing something that isn't God? I wouldn't be doing y'all a good service if I just came up here and didn't talk about what chasing something that isn't God can lead to. If I didn't talk about that part, we wouldn't have any idea how bad it can get, and we wouldn't have a strong desire to turn away and run towards God, right? So here's one example I have of chasing something that's not good for us, and the outcome is devastating. Has anybody ever seen the movie The Prestige? Yeah. 2, 3, 4. Yeah, it's a great movie. It's one of my favorites, and it's a story about two men and their desire to be better than the other. They're both magicians, and they learn a new trick called the teleporting man. It's as if I walked behind that wall and came out from that door. They want to master the trick, and once they master it, they want to change it up so the audience is in more awe of them. The whole movie is about how far these two men will go to be better than the other and to master the trick better than the other. The lengths they go to can be filled with terrible intent. The methods they use are gruesome, manipulative, even disturbing. The movie on the surface is very, very entertaining. And again, like I said, it's one of my favorites. But really looking into it, you can see that their desire to chase something that wasn't wholesome or what they were meant to be chasing led to both characters not being happy. I won't spoil big plot points or the ending or anything, but in case you want to go home and watch it, which I suggest you do. But both men, because of their chase for this thing that they didn't need to be chasing, ended up in terrible places and not happy. My next example is filled with a little bit more hope and happiness. It has to do with chasing something that's not good for you or not really necessary for you, but the ending does show hope. So there's a short film that Disney put out, and this is the one I was going to show y'all, but then I figured I would just sum it up. So Disney released it a couple years ago before a movie, and it's this couple, and they're sitting in their apartment, and you can tell by the people outside, the music that's playing, the town they're living in is, they like to dance. They dance to the music. It's kind of like the setting for this Disney short, is everybody dances to the music. So the wife walks into the room, and her husband's sitting down on the table, or on the chair, sorry, not table. And you can see by the pictures on the wall and the photo album on the table that this couple used to be a couple that could dance and have fun and were always active. But now they're a little older, little gray hairs, and the wife is still kind of feeling it. She's dancing to music, and she wants her husband to stand up and dance with her, but he refuses. He sits down in his chair, he props up the footrest and watches TV and is flicking through the channels. She eventually gets her feelings hurt because he won't join her, and she walks out. He realizes as soon as she walks out that he wants to do that. He wants to be able to live that life, but he was just pouting for no reason. He was kind of just sitting there. So he picks up a photo of them and walks out onto the fire escape of their apartment, and it starts raining. And as you know, it's Disney, so they got to put a little twist on reality. When the rain hits him, he turns young again. He's young, he's spry, he's skinny, his legs are moving, all that stuff. And so as the rain is falling on him, he realizes he's young again, and he starts dancing to the music. He's so excited. He's like, I'm young again, this is awesome. So he jumps off the fire escape, down the ladder, and starts running out through the street. And he's walking past the street, and this girl walks by, and then he realizes that's his wife. They turn around, they meet eyes. It's like awesome. And then they dance for like 3 minutes. It's really, really sweet. But then as rain does, it starts to go away. It's blowing this way. And once the rain stops falling on him, he turns old again. They both do. And the wife is, you know, like, oh, that's strange, but whatever. We're together and we're dancing. She's loving it. And he's like, no, we got to stay in the rain. We got to stay young. We got to stay young. And so he's pulling her. He's doing all these. It fits in with the music. It's pretty cool. And he's chasing her. He's dragging her so he doesn't get left out in the rain, or she doesn't get left out of the rain. And eventually she realizes he's not in this for me. He's not in this for this moment. He wants to be young. He wants to stay in the rain. And so eventually she lets go, and he's running. He gets on this pier with this big carnival and a bunch of people, and he runs all the way to the edge of the pier, and he can't jump in the water. The rain goes, and he's old again. So he turns around. He's really upset. He's like, I lost it. I had it for 4 minutes, and I lost it. So he goes and sits down on a bench, and his wife is still kind of over there. She's really sad. She's kind of walking away with her head down, and he realizes the youth that the rain provided him, what the rain was providing him, was not what he needed. He needed her. He needed that moment. He needed the person who was struggling to get him to realize what he really needed. He needed that person. So he stands up and he walks over to her and he kind of does a slow little dance to the music. He tips his hat, they dance, and then, you know, they have a sweet moment where you can tell he realizes what he did wrong and she realizes he's ready to turn and be with her. So they dance and the short ends. It's really, really sweet. It's my favorite. So he, once he starts to dance again, it ends on a very happy note, like I said, of him turning around and really rediscovering what matters. How often does that happen to us? We're stuck chasing something that isn't good for us when the whole time God is standing right there begging for us to just turn around and face him. When we look at our own lives, what are things we struggle with? What are things we're chasing? It could be unhealthy habits, drugs, drinking, gambling, sexual immorality, you name it. Go to Ephesians 3 and just read the list. It could be unhealthy relationships you're stuck in. It could be a job you don't like. It could be something as small as an app on your phone that is distracting you from living the life you're supposed to be living. As I wrap up here, I just want to share the reason I'm speaking about this. My point of going through the book of Jonah and sharing those examples was to share that sometimes we all get caught up in sin or whatever it may be, and we end up falling away from others, God, and even ourselves who are supposed to be. But there's always a way to get back up. There's always a way to turn around and chase what matters. No matter how far you fall, there's always another chance waiting for you in the hands of God. There is always another chance. Repeat after me. Everybody, there's always another chance. If y'all don't take anything out of this sermon but one thing, that is that thing. So write it down somewhere, repeat it throughout the day, take a video of me saying it, but let me know before you do so I can fix my hair. Anything you have to do to remember it, please do. There is always another chance. Probably in your life, you won't ride on a camel, and you probably won't wake up inside a large aquatic mammal, but with all the same like Jonah, there is something everybody can do. Everybody deserves to get a second chance, even you. It doesn't matter if you grew up in the church and have followed God your entire life or live under a bridge and don't know his name. It doesn't matter if you are 20 years old and going to a Christian university and you mess up terribly, or if you are 50 years old and you're super rich because you sold 3 companies for billions of dollars. It does not matter who you are. If you are 5 or 82, say it with me, there is always another chance. Like Wyatt read before I got up here, God will take us with open arms. He wants us to turn to him and rest. He wants us to take away what we are chasing that is bad for us. He wants to take on that. He wants to lift that burden off of us so we can clearly walk the path he has laid for us. He really does want it. 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, "No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so you can endure it." I eventually did realize how wrong I was living a year and a half ago, how toxic that old friend group was, with me in it or not. I realized the romantic relationship I had gotten myself into was not right for me at all, or as a matter of fact, for the girl. I talked with other people and found good counsel, and they all agreed with me. I've realized for a while now that I was chasing something that wasn't good for me. I was chasing something that wasn't healthy for my relationship with others. I was chasing something that wasn't good for my personal relationship with God. I was running away from the life that I should be living because I was so caught up chasing something else. Today, I can stand up here and confidently say I've grown immensely from last year. I'm in great friendships. I'm constantly pursuing righteousness in everything I do. Not to mention, I'm in a super great relationship with a super great girl. And as a side note, even though nothing will and should be ever as it was, I've mended and fixed relationships from a year and a half ago, four of them. I have turned around. I was chasing the wrong thing, but now I am sprinting toward God. And each and every single one of you can too. God is waiting for you to turn around and look at him. He is standing there, arms wide open, waiting. And with the knowledge that God has his arms open for you and is begging for you to come running back to him, I ask you to look inward. And even if just the tiniest bit of pull in your heart, I encourage you to come forward. Bring your prayer requests, bring your doubts and worries, or if you feel like it's your time to be baptized in the blood of Jesus, I encourage you to come forward as we stand and as we sing.